It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. A case before the Supreme Court will determine whether a controversial Texas law places an undue burden on women who seek an abortion. Hundreds of these laws have been passed across the country. They're known collectively as TRAP laws. That stands for Targeted Regulations of Abortion Providers. Georgia may get one of those if the governor decides to sign the legislation. A new documentary at the Midtown Arts Cinema in Atlanta looks at how these laws have made it harder for abortion clinics in the South especially. The documentary is called Trapped. Here to tell us more is Dawn Porter, who directed the film. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to have you with us. Also with us is Kathy Lohr. She's a former NPR correspondent who's covered abortion issues for what?
More than 20 years.
Yeah, a quarter of a century almost. Yeah,
exactly.
Dawn, give me an example of a trap law. What's a common trap law?
So TRAP laws, as you mentioned, are targeted regulation of abortion providers. And what that means, in more simplistic terms, is regulations that are just invoked against people who provide abortions, either the clinics themselves or the physicians who provide abortions. So one very common law is that physicians who provide abortions have to have admitting privileges to local hospitals. And that sounds like it's a health and safety, a reasonable restriction, but in practice, what has happened is many of the hospitals, in fact, I think all of the hospitals where these laws are in place, have not been willing to grant hospital admitting privileges. And there's various reasons for that. Some of the hospitals have religious opposition to abortion. Many hospitals in America are religiously affiliated. For others, it's a political question. Their board is opposed to abortion. But for others, you know, hospitals are a business, and it doesn't make good economic sense to grant admitting privileges to abortion providers who historically have admitted very few patients to the hospitals. So for a variety of reasons, physicians who are largely coming from out of state to provide abortions in states like Mississippi, Alabama, and Texas have been unable to get these admitting privileges. And there's a direct correlation with the clinics closing. At least that's what I saw in the almost 3 years of filming in these clinics.
Kathy, to require that a physician need admitting privileges implies that there's a real possibility that there may be serious complications and a woman would end up in a hospital, right?
It's partly that, and it's partly because if there is a complication, those who oppose abortion say there would be a direct venue for these women to go. There'd be a direct place where they would be accepted. But in truth, they would be accepted at any hospital, whether or not a doctor had
I looked on the CDC website, they say an abortion is safer than a penicillin shot.
Well, there are major complications in fewer than 1% of all abortions performed
Point
in the United States.
Yes. Something. Yeah, so. Okay. So, Dawn, you went out and spent, as you say, 3 years, and you were talking to a lot of different people. However, most of the people that you spoke to in the documentary are abortion providers or people that work in the clinics. Why is that?
You know, I mean, when you make a documentary film, I do distinguish this from a news piece where you might go to one or the other side and ask them each for their opinions. In this piece, I really wanted to do a profile of what was it like for a provider. And it's really important to remember each of the providers in the film that I focus on were trying to comply with the laws. They did not start out challenging the laws legally. The legal challenges really came after they were unable to comply with the laws. I did write to each of the authors of the laws. We wrote to them. We asked them for comment. And I wasn't able to get anybody to comment on the reasons for the laws. But there are a lot of public statements that the legislators have made. And so we went to some archive film. And you see some of that in the film. The politicians who are writing the laws say that they are for women's health and safety, but they are also unapologetically anti-choice. And I think that that's important to note. They do not make a secret of their opposition to abortion. And so I think what people should do is not check their common sense at the door, but say if a person is anti-choice, that there certainly is some indication that that is part of the motivation, in my opinion, for these laws being written this way.
Let me play actually a little piece from the documentary. This is one of the doctors, Dr. Willie Parker, and he's speaking at this point to one of his patients.
I'm required by law to tell you that by having an abortion, it can increase your risk for breast cancer. There's no scientific evidence to support that. Now, the state requires me to tell you that if you were having this procedure, there's the risk of complications. I think that's a good thing to know, the risk. The state requires me to tell you that you can have heavy bleeding that can be life-threatening and can require you to be transferred to the hospital and need a blood transfusion. If you're having bleeding that can only be controlled with removing your uterus, you'd have to have a hysterectomy and you lose your ability to have babies in the future. Those are all the risks associated, but guess what? Those are the exact same risks that's associated with having a baby. It is to say that you're not taking any extra health risk, so abortion is extremely safe.
Now, Don, John Oliver, the comedian, used a number of excerpts from your documentary in a long piece on trap laws that he did recently. And this one seemed to really surprise him, that a physician, a scientist, would be sitting there telling you one thing and immediately saying there's zero scientific evidence for this. How common is this situation that you filmed?
So that was a film from a Mississippi clinic. Dr. Parker is the physician that I was following, and he's also similar laws, not the breast cancer. The breast cancer was part of the Alabama law but until it was recently removed. But this is very common in states, particularly across the South. And I think one of the things that this points to that is so troubling is the ordinary consumer does not think of the health department as a politicized entity. And so if the health department publishes a booklet, you are assuming as a consumer that all of the information is accurate. And yet there's a recent study that indicates that up to 40% in some cases, up to 40% of the information in these health department published pamphlets are inaccurate. They give inaccurate fetal development, for example. And so I think that it's...
Could you repeat that again? Mm-hmm. Up to 40% of the information in these medical, they're basically medical pamphlets, correct?
They are medical pamphlets that are required and issued by the health departments in states with these trap laws. And I really appreciate the journalists who are covering this topic because it's very, very complicated to explain something that on its face seems reasonable and yet is just so inaccurate. So it's actually, Dr. Parker had a legal opinion that because of the First Amendment, because he has a right to free speech, that he could actually give the required information from the states, but then also tell them in his medical opinion. He has been a physician for more than 20 years. He has a postdoc from Harvard. He has studied women's reproductive health, both as a scientist and as a practicing OBGYN and abortion provider in the United States and internationally. He has a serious, as do the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American Medical Association. So the weight of the medical evidence by experts opposes that these laws are written for health and safety, and certainly opposes providing inaccurate medical information to women.
Kathy, take a listen to this particular portion. This is a woman in the film who remained anonymous. She says the abortion clinics that were near her were closed down, and she looked online for other alternatives.
So that's why I did actually look at some of the home methods, but they were more geared towards, I guess, early pregnancy, that people can help themselves miscarriage. But then reading about them, it was scary. Like herbs that you can take. And I actually ordered some. I was afraid to take them after I read about them. And people are going to find a way if they're truly determined. I mean, I was on the internet looking for any resource, any option. So just because I talked myself out of trying some of the things that were mentioned doesn't mean other people aren't.
What is the relationship between abortion legality and abortion incidents, the frequency of abortions? What's that relationship? If we make abortion illegal, how does that cut down on the number of abortions?
Well, most doctors and experts and everybody that's looked at this issue says that's not going to happen. Women will either travel to out of state, which they're doing right now. In Texas, people are traveling to New Mexico. They're traveling hundreds of miles to the clinics that have remained open. I believe over half the clinics in Texas have closed, for about 40 clinics. And Texas is a huge state. Just for example, there are 5 million women of childbearing age in the state of Texas. So the last time that I was at a clinic in Texas, which was probably a couple years ago, I was in Lubbock. That clinic has closed, and there was nothing for hundreds of miles between basically Dallas area and New Mexico for these women, where these women could go receive an abortion. So we're seeing increased Google searches for how to self-abort or what kind of drugs they would buy. There's more incidents of people going to Mexico, for example, to get abortion pills.
Not New Mexico, but the actual country of Mexico.
Yeah. To try to get pills. And there's no guarantee that those pills would be actually what the women think they are. There's no safety about that. So,
yeah, there's also a study out of the University of Texas that Dan Grossman and his team were on the ground in Texas when HB2...
HB2 is the controversial law that we're talking about that the Supreme Court is considering.
That's right. So when HB2 was enacted in 2013, Grossman's team was already surveying abortion providers in the state. And so studying the actual incidence of women trying to seek abortions, they estimate that between 100,000 and 240,000 women of reproductive age in Texas have tried to self-abort since the law has gone into effect.
Wait. Just in Texas alone, that possibly up to 240,000 women have tried to self-abort?
Yeah, and that's a really important study. Those are political scientists on the ground surveying the clinics that are open. Kathy is exactly right. There were 40 clinics that were open in Texas before HB2. It's now 19. If the Texas law is upheld by the Supreme Court, it will go to 9. Texas is the second largest state with women of reproductive health, with 5.4 million women of reproductive health in the state. So, you know, this on-the-ground analysis is incredibly important to look at, you know, the actual experience of women once the laws have been implemented.
Well, let's take another listen. This is a clip of a protester who was outside of Dr. Willie Parker's clinic. That's the doctor we spoke of earlier. He said a lot of personal things about Dr. Parker. He was claiming Dr. Parker is not actually a Christian because he performs abortions.
He goes down to Mississippi twice a month to kill his own race in Jackson. You know that? He claims to be a Christian. I think he was a Christian. But Christians don't go around killing babies.
Kathy, the opinion on abortion, do we see it changing? And one of the reasons I ask that is because other research has told us that the largest basis for opposition to abortion is religiously based. And yet we're also seeing signs that America is becoming more and more, especially as we look at the younger people, less religious. So are we also seeing that reflected in the public opinion on abortion?
For decades, the public opinion has been split over abortion. Now, the question might be, in what cases do people favor abortions? Is it rape, incest, life of the mother, which is what used to be surveyed all the time. And in more and more of states where legislatures are conservative, and that's many southern states, as we're hearing, but also in the Midwest. In fact, 24 states have some provisions of these targeted regulations already passed. So that's almost half the states in the country. The issue is, it's still very divided. This country is bitterly divided on the issue of abortion, from what I can see. And I've talked to a lot of people who oppose abortion. It is religious-based, but it is also that it is their firm belief that life begins at conception. So if it is your belief that life begins at conception, then this, to them, is killing a human being. And that's where we've seen the personhood issues come up across the country. It came up in Mississippi, which also only has one clinic still operating. It was voted down by a vote of the people. But it isn't as clear as some people think it is.
Dawn, how much of this hinges on this pending Supreme Court decision? And I should mention that the calculation, the judicial calculation on this Supreme Court decision has changed massively since the death of Antonin Scalia. There are now only 8 members of the court, and that means if they're tied, if it's 4-4, the decision
lower
from
court
the
decision
lower
would
court
stand.
Stands. Yeah. So how are trap laws in all kinds of states also dependent on what happens in the Supreme Court relative to this Texas law?
They absolutely are. This is probably the most important Supreme Court decision in abortion access and reproductive rights in the last 2 decades since Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which allowed states to regulate abortion for health and safety reasons.
That's what established the undue burden precedent, correct?
That's right. Before the Casey decision, which was in 1993, the Roe v. Wade decision essentially said states could not regulate abortion in the first trimester. So that was 1973. In the Casey case, the court ruled, Justice Kennedy, writing for the majority, ruled that states could regulate abortion clinics and could regulate abortion at the state level if it was for health and safety purposes. And that's where you see the targeted regulations of abortion providers written with the stated purpose of regulating health and safety. And the question before the court is whether the regulations as written, as applied, and as in effect are actually an undue burden, a substantial obstacle to women seeking abortion. So one of the most important cases, if the law, as Kathy mentioned, if the law is upheld, then similar trap laws would be constitutional and states are free. The 24 states that already have trap laws, those would continue to remain in effect. If the court splits 4-4, tie goes to the lower court, and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals decision upholding the Texas law will remain in effect, and the Texas clinics that can't comply with that law will close. What that won't do is control the trap laws in other states, and there are many cases working their way through the federal courts, and so the abortion rights activists will continue to fight the laws. If the law is struck down as unconstitutional, the trap laws in Texas, HB2, and similar laws across the country would be held unconstitutional and would be struck down.
Don Porter directed and produced the documentary Trapped. Kathy Lohr is a former NPR correspondent. Don and Kathy, thank you both so much.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you.
Trapped is playing at the Midtown Art Cinema in Atlanta through Thursday. Obviously, this is an issue about which I'm sure many of you have strong opinions. We'd love to hear all of them. You can call us at 404-500-9457 or tweet us or post on Facebook.